with Shred, we really thought about trying to like kind of conquer these solutions that at the highest level, somebody who's out there trying to win races or win in a half pipe or do big mountain stuff, what do they need to perform at their best? But does that also fall down to the recreational skier? In 99% of cases, yes, it does. So that's like how I thought about, you know, our product development stage of things. And yeah, I mean, of course, like within business, there's inherent risks involved. I mean, like in a lot of like our development phases, we're the first to do what we're doing in our industry. So if, you know, we're coming up with a new helmet material, you don't know at the scalability what the expansion rates of whatever foam is going to be. So we've actually like run into some problems like 7 or 8 years ago. Like we innovated this new foam material in our helmets and expansion rate was different than when we were prototyping, when we went to scale, and like the fit was off. So like we had to go back to the drawing board and like change some things like that. And that's an extremely costly mistake when you're a smaller independent company like we are. So, you know, taking risks because we're trying to innovate was really important to us, but also, you know, understanding, you know, trying to push the forefronts while also creating something that's still scalable.
Hello, and welcome back to the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental writer and author of the book, Outdoor Minimalist, Wasteless Hiking, Camping, and Backpacking. The Outdoor Minimalist Podcast has the goal to give listeners actionable ways to waste less hiking, camping, backpacking, and more during every step of their process. Your impact outdoors starts long before you hit the trail and goes beyond leave no trace ethics. You'll learn how to identify sustainable outdoor brands, how to ask hard questions regarding sustainability, and begin to shift and evolve your mindset to integrate minimalism into all of your outdoor pursuits. In episode 132 of the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast, we finally enter the world of snow sports and skiing with one of America's ski legends, Ted Ligety. Ted Ligety is one of America's greatest ski racers of all time. The two-time Olympic champion revolutionized ski racing as an athlete. Now, he's taking that energy, meticulous approach to craft an ability to assess risk into a new venue, producing ski gear. Working with MIT, Ted has built ski goggles and protection that lives up to his lofty expectations as a ski racer. Surviving and thriving on injected tracks on the World Cup demands a helmet that protects and goggles that enhance visibility in all conditions. Ted's hand-built brand, Shred Optics, is moving the needle. He's an open book and brings a fresh perspective on building products from scratch. Thank you for joining me on the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast today, Ted. And although skiing may not be happening at the time of this publishing, I'm still excited that you're here to talk with us about your skiing career and also your business. So to start, I'll ask my standard question, which is, how did you get interested in outdoor recreation and how does it fit into your life now?
So I grew up in Park City, Utah. And so if you grew up here and you don't ski, I don't know what you're going to do in the wintertime, really. So my parents, you know, moved to Utah in the 60s and 70s, and they were attracted to the state because, you know, they could go skiing and all the outdoor activities that we have here. And as a two-year-old, like, what else are they going to do besides getting me on snow? So they started me skiing when I was about 2 years old. And actually, it's funny, they say that I didn't really love it at first, but once it became, you know, more 5, 6 years old, that became my core friend group, was, you know, my buddies I were going skiing with. And my parents would always joke that the mountain was my babysitter. So started from a young age and just continued chugging along. I mean, I got into ski racing also just because it was what my friends were doing. It wasn't because like my parents were pushing me into it or anything like that. So it was just all about like having fun on the mountains.
Yeah. Is that kind of core friend group what made you want to continue skiing and kind of pursue it as a career? Or how does it fit into your adult life, I guess?
Yeah. So when I started ski racing about when I was 10 years old, it kind of coincided with the 94 Olympics when Tommy Moe won the downhill. And that's when I was like, oh man, ski racing is cool. Like, I want to do that. And of course, like every 10-year-old kid, especially that's like into sports, probably has like 10 different idols that they want to be. I also want to be like John Stockton too on jazz and stuff like that. But fell in love with ski racing, fell in love with, you know, skiing in general, but going fast and the competitive sense was what I really loved. And still like my best friends to this day are kids I grew up with since I was, you know, 5 years old skiing around the mountain. So we've kept a tight connection because of that. And then you know, I got my butt kicked throughout my teenage years, but then made a big leap after high school and made the US ski team and kind of never looked back from there. So, you know, I'm really fortunate to have been able to like live out the childhood dream, I guess.
Yeah, that's amazing. It seems like a very natural fit and kind of progression in your life and has kind of led you to where you are with your business and everything today as well. So before we get to talking about Shred Optics specifically, I do want to know a little bit more about like the risks involved in skiing and ski racing specifically and how you kind of like manage those aspects.
Yeah, so ski racing is a very risk inherent sport. I mean, the injury level, there's a funny statistic. You're more likely to win Olympic gold medal having torn your ACL than not. And that's not because it's an anatomical advantage. It's just because you're most likely to tear your ACL before you get good enough to win the Olympics. So it's an inherently dangerous sport. I mean, you know, at the downhill level, it can be, you know, life or death. So that's just kind of like the reality of it. That's like part of the draw, but also that is an inherent risk. And I think that's like, of course, I'm biased, but I think ski racing is one of the hardest mental sports out there because you have such a small window of opportunity to perform at your best, but the consequences are really high. You know, if you're thinking of like, people always think like, oh, golf is so tough mentally. And that's true because it's a long time, but you can make a lot of bad shots in golf or make a lot of bad shots in tennis and still stay in and win it. Whereas in ski racing, like a bad turn could cost you and make you go into the fence and end your season. Or it could just cost you enough time that you're out of the race. So, you know, really small margins of error. But the way I guess I always thought about risk in ski racing was like, you have to take risk in order to win. That's like inherently part of it. If you just ski conservatively, you never gonna, unless you're like so much better than everybody else, which I never was, you have to take risk in order to win. But also like I based that risk on like survivability. It didn't make sense to take a risk that if I mess it up, that was going to end the season or the year. That's how I thought about a lot of my risks. And of course, like you can't plan for every eventuality, but definitely trying to plan for longevity and that risk taking. I mean, taking risks to win, but also there are some places where like, is it worth taking this risk here to get 4 more tenths of speed where the consequences going to that fence at 80 miles an hour? Like those are kind of like how I kind of evaluated those risks. And it's curious, you're making those calculations, you know, in hundreds of a second. So it's kind of like going back to an instinctual level, but there are people on tour that hurt themselves every year because they take stupid risks. And there's people who, you know, can have a long longevity because they take the right risk. So that was definitely something I wouldn't say was always in the forefront of my mind, because if you start thinking about those consequences too often, then you start to realize, you know, how scary the sport can really be. But, you know, being cognizant of the realities is important too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing that has kind of made me not really want to get into downhill snow sports or the dangers involved. But I could see if you grew up doing it, you kind of have a little bit more control and your instincts are better and you're so well practiced. So your reaction time would be better for risk management. And so I guess like throughout your career, when you decided that you wanted to start Shred Optics, did that risk management and like your approach to risk in skiing, did that apply to your business at all?
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason I started Shred was after I won the Olympics in 2006, I was looking out there and it was like my options for, I mean, I was thinking about goggles because that was like, I think my biggest pain point at the time was you either look like a 60-year-old German tourist or like the very Euro-centric brands or like the bigger, like huge conglomerate brands had, you know, bad, like the Oakleys or Smiths or whatever had bad lenses, small field of view. Just really didn't work with what I was trying to do. So I was like, I need to create something that I think is cool. Like when I go free skiing with my buddies back in Utah that I'm like not ashamed to wear, but also has the performance elements that I need in order to compete the best. And then that also came along with the coinciding business that I started with a partner of mine who'd been making a protective gear for myself for years. And so the two of us started from there. And the protection side of it was obviously really important from the get-go too, because like I said, like survivability, longevity, trying to create a long career in a risky sport, protection was really important as well. So, you know, trying to create, you know, the best stuff that allowed me to go faster, but also stay safer was kind of like always the ethos. And I always thought, take goggles for an example, like we've been working with MIT for a bunch of years on lens technology. And so in ski racing, like when it's flat light, that can be a matter of seconds between one person and the next if the light changes a little bit. Whereas my wife, who's a recreational skier, that's the difference between her going to the lodge or still skiing, you know? So these kind of problems that I had as a professional skier also trickle down to the average skier as well. So that's why we pushed hard on our contrast boosting lens technology that we've developed at MIT, which is really to defeat flat light, but turned out to be a lens that works awesome all winter long. And so like on the back protection side, like we created the first ever soft and flexible back protector, because who really wants to wear a hard plastic shell on their back when they're out skiing? Like that's not going to be a usable experience. And we found it's actually safer to have a soft and flexible back protector that gets hard on impact. And so that makes it so the usability case is way, way higher. And so with Shred, we really thought about trying to like kind of conquer these solutions that at the highest level, somebody who's out there trying to win races or win in a half pipe or do big mountain stuff, what do they need to perform at their best? But does that also fall down to the recreational skier? In 99% of cases, yes, it does. So that's like how I've thought about, you know, our product development stage of things. And yeah, I mean, of course, like within business, there's inherent risks involved. I mean, like in a lot of like our development phases, we're the first to do what we're doing in our industry. So if, you know, we're coming up with a new helmet material, you don't know at the scalability what the expansion rates of whatever foam is going to be. So we've actually like run into some problems like 7 or 8 years ago. Like we innovated this new foam material on our helmets and expansion rate was different than when we were prototyping, when we went to scale, and like the fit was off. So like we had to go back to the drawing board and like change some things like that. And that's an extremely costly mistake when you're a smaller independent company like we are. So, you know, taking risks because we're trying to innovate was really important to us, but also, you know, understanding, you know, trying to push the forefronts while also creating something that's still scalable.
Yeah, it sounds like some of the risks you guys took maybe paid off in the end, like they were really beneficial in terms of the products that you designed and like the business outcome. But were there any specific challenges that you faced along the way? Or do you have examples of maybe when taking that risk didn't really play out?
I mean, we've taken a lot of risks. Like I said, like, so we like innovated this new foam material and it has worked out now, but it took us a year or two to like revamp it to actually have a great fit piece of it. So that was like one thing where like, you know, when you mess up in the market punishes you today, tomorrow, when you have a fit issue, and then they forgive you 5 years later. So I mean, those are like long tail things out there. So I mean, we've like really try to be better at honing those. But like when you're trying to do something brand new, it's not always straightforward. I mean, we've always been pushing hard on the sustainability front. And like, so we were the first ever to, like, we had a goggle strap made out of recycled bike tires, which was cool, but like it wasn't perfect fit wise. You know, we didn't do that like across the whole line, but in kind of a select area. But then in the last couple of years, we've gone to, you know, fully sustainable straps across most of our line, which we were the first to do as well. Which like the fit actually is great. It's just a little bit different than the traditional strap out there. So, but we thought the risk was worth the reward of trying to create a recyclable strap. And so we've kind of made some of these risks where, you know, we think that the difference is good. I mean, we are a performance brand first. And so we want to make products, you know, that work at the highest level. But, you know, of course, sustainability is a really important piece. And so there's places where you can like go full on in that regard. And there's places that it's harder. I mean, we were also the first in our industry to create, you know, 100% or no plastic in any of our packaging. And, you know, that we did that 5 years ago. And now, you know, that's kind of the standard operating procedure. But that was like a no risk, you know, like not having like a plastic window in your goggle ends up being just fine in retail. So there's, you know, there's all sorts of places where you can take risks and it's beneficial, and some places where, you know, it takes a longer time to prepare for those things.
Yeah, you mentioned that you're a performance brand first. So I think that's pretty standard in the outdoor industry because consumers expect a certain level of performance from brands like yours. And so you explained a little bit of some of your sustainability initiatives, which is really cool. But from the inception of Shred Optics, then, what was kind of your sustainability focus and trajectory throughout product development? So like some other examples with the goggles specifically, maybe would be good.
Yeah, I mean, so we're a snow sports first company. I mean, we do mountain bike stuff. I mean, the outdoors is our playground. And, you know, anybody who has been playing in the snow for, you know, the last 20 years has seen a difference in the climate. And that's obviously like worrying when we're, that's like my passion, going on the mountains and skiing on frozen water is really important to me. I mean, it's important that, you know, my kids have that opportunity to go skiing. I have 3-year-old twins and a 6-year-old and they're all out skiing. So like being able to share this sport and this passion in the outdoors is really important to them. So trying to create a brand that pushes on that forefront. And like I said, like the entry fee to be a company that's in this space is you have to make high performing pieces. And then beyond that, like looking for ways to be more sustainable, whether, you know, sometimes this is like logistical pieces or, and sometimes it's like I said, on our packaging, which was like an easy thing to do like early on. And then on the product side of things, I mean, starting to use more, you know, flax fiber in our sunglasses or more of like a recycled nylon material and, you know, trying to use more of these recycled plastics. I mean, a lot of our products have plastic in them. That's just like the nature of the beast. I mean, but we're not at the point right now with like recycled plastics to use in our lenses because we think the lens performance is so important. But the frame, we can go hard on sustainability there. And we can go hard on sustainability and straps. And so, you know, where we can push the forefront there, we try to push hard on it. And where it's not quite there, where it's going to be a big detriment performance-wise. And I think in our industry, it's not like just performance, like, oh, it's better. It's also like a safety element too. So it's both those like the consequence when you talk about risk, like, yes, we need to balance, I guess, both those things. And so where we can, we push hard on the sustainability front. And, you know, of course, like being part of 1% for the planet and all those things, I think are important to be part of when you're in the snow sports industry and outdoor industry.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of like outdoor publications coming out with stuff about climate change and how it's impacting the ski season. And I know where I live in Washington, the ski season was exceptionally short this year. And I think that that's probably going to become a trend a little bit, unfortunately. So it's great that your brand is focusing on sustainability aspects since it impacts a sport that you love the most.
Yeah, exactly.
Adventuring plans on your calendar? Remember to grab your Lava Linens travel towel on your way out the door. Founded by a mother-daughter team, Lava Linens crafts durable, luxurious travel towels as a more sustainable and better performing alternative to microfiber and cotton towels. Powered by flax, hemp, and Tencel, they're designed to be by your side for years to come. Use the code OUTDOORMINIMALIST for 15% off your next order. So I'm trying to think in terms of durability then. I think durability, especially with a performance equipment, is usually really, really important in terms of sustainability. So how did you kind of address the durability aspects, especially since, I mean, I know you're wearing goggles on your face, but I'm sure that there's wear and tear involved.
So like a huge piece of that for us was, so in our contrast boosting lens 2.0 that we developed with MIT, like the idea was an awesome flat light lens, but also a lens that worked all winter long. So if you look out there in the market, like there's a lot of these magnet lenses and, you know, multiple changing, like Smith has 18 different lens options. So that's how many lenses they're producing that are kind of going to waste, basically. Like if you buy a pair of goggles, it comes with two lenses, you either have to make that choice or like you're just not using that other lens. So that's huge waste. So for us, like it was important to create the best possible lens that worked. You know, our first objective was flat light, but that worked in all winter conditions. So that was our big piece. So that's a huge amount of waste saved right there by creating one lens to defeat all winter conditions. And so thinking about ways on that front, you know, of course, like, yeah, durability, it's like your goggles need to last for years. You know, helmets, I mean, like helmets are like kind of like a place where it's like the foam does break down. We're trying to push, you know, the forefronts on that. So it's like, yes, a helmet can last 10 years, but it might not be the highest impact rated helmet anymore after 10 years. So there's places like that, but on the like their back foam and the back protectors, it doesn't break down. So pushing hard on that and having places where if like on our flexi vests, like the foam can come out of the vest material so you can wash it. And if that vest breaks down, you can get a different vest. I mean, so you can keep a lot of the components still going that have a long lifespan. But as you said, yeah, it's like you don't want to be replacing every piece of your equipment on a yearly basis. So trying to create stuff that lasts a long time. And I mean, I'm skiing, you know, 100+ days a year and creating something that like, if I can use something for 100+ days in 1 year that I use every single day, like that is a good longevity test because that's basically 5 years of most people's seasons. I compacted into one season. So if I can, you know, get a couple seasons out of something, I know we're on the right track.
How do you think like the average consumer? I mean, you mentioned that you're skiing maybe a little bit more than the average person would have time to. So how do you think the average person can kind of assess when they would actually need to replace a piece of gear versus that just like opting for the newest model? Does that make sense? You know, because you said with the helmets, obviously that's a safety piece. So you want to be able to tell, like, when does this actually need to be replaced for safety purposes?
I mean, the helmet, I think like the standard out there is like 5 years is kind of what they say. Like for most foams, it's like the safety quality of it is just starts to get diminished. There's not like a hard rule, I would say, out there because it's so different product to product. So like, yeah, goggles, like if your lens is good, then you can rock it for a long, long time. And then also like you don't need to get brand new goggles every year necessarily. You just replace lens if they get scratched. So, I mean, there's pieces that, like I said, there's some replaceability within certain components of a product that helps bring out the lifespan. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's like assessing where things are in their life cycle. And I think a lot of that's like, it's hard to, like I said, have a true rule. It's like a common sense kind of piece, which I guess is not always like super simple and straightforward for somebody if they're 5 to 10 times a year skier, like maybe they don't like know well enough. But I mean, we've done some stuff on our website on education on that stuff. And so there's a lot of resources out there in that regard, but I think it's kind of if it seems to be working, then yeah.
I'll be sure to link to your website in the show notes. So if people want to check out those resources, they can. And then if we are kind of talking about durability, I guess, what would be some pieces of advice or resources that you have in terms of prolonging the lifespan of a product, especially for skiing, because it's experiencing a lot of wear and exposure to elements like moisture and things like that. So are there ways that people can help that equipment not degrade as fast?
Yeah, I mean, so like on goggles, it's important that they dry out. So like we have like goggle cares, like you don't leave it in the bottom of your bag for the night or the week or the month. So you let it dry out. So oftentimes it's like when you get home, taking it out of the goggle case and like letting it just sit on the counter outside or on a hook or something for the night, just so like the lens that has a coating for the anti-fog, like basically the way that works is absorbing moisture. And so if that just continues to hold moisture, if you like leave it in your goggle bag or leave it in your sweaty helmet and you got wet gloves in there and stuff like that, this is going to absorb moisture. And then the next day, it's going to be kind of at its limit of moisture absorption. And so it'll fog easier the next day. So letting like stuff dry out is like a really simple, easy way to do that. You know, transporting your like goggles and a lens cloth is going to make your lenses stay in better condition for a longer time. So, you know, some simple things like that, I think, are important, which I think are most people kind of know. Like, yeah, you don't want to leave your like wet stuff like sitting at the bottom of your bag and like start to go out the next day and enjoy the day. It's, you know, things like that are kind of obvious, but also, you know, important as far as longevity of your products.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to have like a two-part question, so you can kind of answer them separately. Yeah. So if we take the industry as a whole, so if we look at the snow sports industry and like manufacturing and things like that, what would you say to other product producers in terms of like how and why we should be aligning more with sustainable practices alongside performance? And then the second one will be for consumers, but you can answer that one first.
I think just as I said, like trying to think of materials. And I think it's like part of like the supply chain, like, so what's like the scalability? I mean, like there's a lot of new materials and pieces out there that are more sustainable. And so a lot of it is like a matter of getting like more brands on board, like our goggle strap, like that's an easy thing that more companies could adopt. And this, as like more people adopt to that, the scalability gets better, the product gets better. I think the mindset of being early adopters in this world is important because, you know, when something like a lot of these sustainable products are in their nascent stage, like the production side is risky. They're like, there is some risk. If you're the only person, you know, pushing on some new product area that is all sustainable and that, you know, the testing hasn't been going on for as many years or there's not as many manufacturers doing it, that becomes like a harder leap for, I think, more companies, but also like there's more risk inherent. So I think like having more brands being willing to take some like risk on that thing, I think will like make a big difference because that pushes those technologies further. I mean, the suppliers that are trying to like make these products also like can only push the forefront if more people are willing to take the risk on them as well. And that's an important piece. And yeah, I mean, like, just we're always like looking at our supply chains and how can we do things better, like the long-term planning of it to make sure, you know, we're not having to like air freight anything. Like, that's obviously like really costly, but also, you know, both on emission side of it, but also on, you know, the actual like net cost of it. So, you know, the planning side of it, getting really efficient there. And so there's, you know, there's lots of places, packaging, you know, trying to lower the volume. Like a couple of years ago, we like were able to lower the volume on our goggle box. So we're able to create, you know, instead of 50 goggles in a carton, we're able to put 60 goggles in a carton, you know, like things like that. Those are like things that like end up making a big difference sustainability wise, but also like when you figure those out, they become beneficial cost wise too, which I think is important to like realize too, as a business too, like sustainability and margin are not necessarily opposing forces, and trying to like find ways that they're, you know, complementary, I think is important in business too, because like that is really where the needle starts moving, when both those pieces can move in conjunction and not opposing.
Yeah, that duality, I think, is important. And innovation. Yeah, I feel like a lot of innovations now are kind of like falling into that category, like you're saying. So I guess then if we look at sustainability from a consumer side, what things do you think consumers can be doing more of in order to help uphold and even like push more product producers to be more sustainable?
I think it's like choosing products that are more sustainable. And that's like not always super obvious, I guess. Like I said, right now we're the only one with like our recycled strap. So it's not super obvious out there in like the market that it's not happening more places. And we try to make it obvious on our like website and through our retailers and stuff like that. But I think it's just looking for those. And I think the consumer is, especially in the snow sports industry, is very educated in the need for sustainability. And just, they might not know exactly where in various different product categories these sustainability stories and pieces are. So I think it's just like being on the lookout for them, and then supporting like those brands and companies that are pushing there, I think is important too. Like the consumer choice, you know, the big companies will follow suit if the consumer goes that way as well. I think it's just like being educated and like looking out for those products that are like trying to be sustainable.
In that vein, then, how can listeners learn more about you and Shred Optics if they want to align with a more sustainable ski goggle?
Yeah, so shredoptics.com is our website. And so like on our like goggle straps, it has like a little like recycled emblem on it. We have it on those products as well. So, I mean, that's like an easy way. And so like following us on what we do on like social media, it's, you know, at Shred Optics on Instagram and stuff like that. I think that's like, we do a lot of like product stuff related there, and we have a lot of like resources on like maintaining your gear there as well. So yeah, shredoptics.com is a good resource for sure.
And like I said before, I'll be sure to share all of those assets in the show notes so people can find it easily. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you hear, let me know. Leave a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Instagram at outdoor.minimalist.book, on YouTube, or subscribe to our weekly newsletter at theoutdoorminimalist.com. For even more updates, other educational resources, and to help build an outdoor community with the shared goal to create a better outdoor space as we recreate.